Thank you for joining us on Easy's Community Focus, where we look at the issues that matter in South Florida and the people and organizations that are making a difference. Well, this has been quite a big breaking news couple of days with the FDA reviewing the Pfizer vaccine for COVID-19 and then giving it emergency approval, and distribution is supposed to begin as early as tomorrow. So we wanted to get some idea, not only about the vaccine and how they did things so quickly, but about the coronavirus in general and the progress of the disease and where things stand now.
I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Cheryl Holder, who is currently the Interim Associate Dean for Diversity, Equity, Inclusivity, and Community Initiatives, and an Associate Professor at the FIU Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine. Dr. Holder, thank you for talking to us today.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for inviting me on the show.
I am so excited to talk to you. We were very fortunate at Cox Media Group. You spent a good hour talking to us about what's going on with coronavirus to give us facts, and there's so much misinformation out there, and we'd like to talk about that, talk about the vaccine, but first, let's give the audience a little bit of your background, because you've worked with vaccines before, spent time at Jackson Memorial and University of Miami Family Medicine, so let you tell your story.
Well, I'm a board certified internist. That's internal medicine, and an HIV specialist. I've been doing this for a long time. I came down in 1987 from New York to work at Jackson Memorial Hospital after my training in internal medicine. And I was fortunate enough to work with Dr. Lynn Carmichael at Family Medicine, the University of Miami. And at that time, if everyone remembers HIV crisis, yes, and that pandemic. And so I was an HIV by just default. Everybody who did primary care was an HIV treater. It wasn't a specialty. It was what we did because it was just a pandemic similar to what we're experiencing now. And with that experience, I got very involved in the community because our goal, as it is currently with coronavirus, is preventing infections until adequate treatment or cure arrives. And until that arrives, when in the 80s, when we started with HIV, we didn't have adequate treatment. We didn't have any cures, and we still don't. But we had ways to be able to help prevent this infection. So that was one of our goals as we got involved in the community, at least I got involved in the community, was with that in mind. How do I decrease the infection? How do we save lives? How do we get patients to live until we get to the cure or adequate treatment and prevent as many as possible? So that's when I went on several boards with NIH. I was on a vaccine trial board, the community-based participatory research section. That was back in the day. So Dr. Fauci and many of the HIV specialists you see on the news were back there with us as we got into how do we leverage the strengths in our community? How do we get the education to our community? How do we give a clear message so we can stop this disease and stop the pandemic of HIV? So from that experience, I've continued working in our communities, developing programs. I spent 20 years in the Jackson UM system. And then in 2009, when Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine opened, with the understanding that the curriculum would be based in the community and looking at our social determinants of health, that are what are the real issues that cause illness in people. Our genetics play a role, but it's so much more the zip code, as we've all learned, the education, your transportation, your access to health insurance, access to knowledge. So these are the things that we've learned really drives health outcomes. And we saw it in HIV. And so Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine became a school that was devoted to doing that.
It's very interesting to me how you put that in terms of how the community and lack of information is so important to making a change. Because I remember during the HIV pandemic, when nobody knew what we were dealing with, at that point, the messaging, once they understood a little bit better about transmission, was your condom is your protection.
And exactly.
I feel like there's a correlation between that and what we're experiencing now, where until there's treatment or a cure, your mask is your prevention.
Perfect. And that's unfortunately what happened in this pandemic, which thank God did not happen in the HIV pandemic, was that our science was listened to. But then we're always consistent and we didn't have outside forces saying, condoms don't work, don't wear them. We had everyone consistently saying condoms work, also testing works, because we then made a massive effort to test as everybody as possible. The CDC made it routine to test. So we had the prevention and we had the role of testing, and we also had contact tracing back in HIV. So if you became positive, the health department tracked your contacts.
So what is the difference now with coronavirus, where it's been so difficult to get people to buy into the concept of testing and contact tracing and wearing masks?
Unfortunately, what I see and what I understand is because it is a respiratory illness that presents for most people like the flu or a cold. With HIV, when you got it, you knew you were not going to get a mild form of it. There was no mild form of HIV. So there was no way anyone could manipulate that message and change that message. When you have a disease that has different severity levels, it makes it easier for folks to say, oh, I got it. I didn't have any problem.
Right.
And another group to say, oh, I just had a little sniffles. And then when only a small number of people die, then you have time before you can then put doubt. And we know in psychology, you put doubt out there, there will be a certain amount of people over time will feel it. I don't know, even if you believe in the science, just putting the doubt in the mind gives a little bit more chances to become more skeptical.
And, you know, I think there's a combination of that. And over the years, there's been a lack of trust of government. And I don't even mean just in the past 4 years. This started many years ago. And so any messaging that comes from the government is suspect to a lot of people. And of course, we've gotten so much mixed messaging that it's been hard for people to really distinguish what's real and what's not. But I read all of the medical information, and I started following this in December when it was only in China. And I was seeing these stories. I'm like, wow, what is going on? And I've seen the numbers. I look at the numbers every day of new cases and new deaths. And people are like, oh, it's only 1%. Well, when it first started, it was a 20% death rate. Now it's actually 3% in the United States, not the 1%. And then when you think about, we have 330 million people in the country, only 1% is 3 million people. So only 1% is a meaningless statement to me, because it's still 3 million people. And if it's someone you love, all that you need is one person.
Exactly. And unfortunately, human nature is what it is. And until it hits you close, you often will minimize.
Right.
And even some people, even when it hits them, like I just heard Rudy Giuliani says he's still committed to his previous position.
And so he's in the hospital.
And we saw President Trump was still committed to some of his previous positions and would not give the preventive message. So there is a level of when you go to denial, and that's what we see in certain diseases, in many diseases that allows that level of severity where you can deny it. With HIV, by the time you start becoming emaciated and sick, and you have the changes, there's no denial there.
Right.
Because you would live that way for a while. With coronavirus, people die, so people can easily forget, and they can say it's other reasons. So it lends itself to be manipulated by those who do not have the preventive message in mind and who have other gains by giving misinformation. In my career, I have not seen the mistrust of medicine to this level. They've done studies. The Gallup organization did a study and showed that the trusted messengers in our society are nurses first, doctors, pharmacists, usually the health people. And this is the first time in my career where I've seen where the health people are also equally subjected to the fears and the mistrust that you've seen with government, as you described.
Right.
So there's something bigger here that I hope we can deal with as a society. because if we're going to survive this and survive other impending pandemics and other issues that come up that impacts our health, we're going to have to decide as a community, as a society, how we're going to use science and how we're going to listen to the messengers.
Yeah, I think some of it is we're so accustomed to having quick answers and solutions because of the technology that's available. So you get sick, there's a cure other than, for example, cancer. We know with cancer, there are better and better treatments. So every year that improves. You know, we know with diabetes, there are treatments and you can have diabetes your whole life and take medication to control it. So we're accustomed to having easy, quick answers. And this is completely new. And I think people have had difficulty wrapping their minds around the fact that we don't know. The doctors don't know. The specialists don't know, although we know way more now than we did back in March. So yeah, the progress has been phenomenal. Now, about the vaccine, you know, the last I heard when they came up with a new vaccine, it took 4 years. And this was a remarkably fast effort to come up with a vaccine. Can you address how the science is there and the medical technology is there? And when you've got funding like Dolly Parton donating $1 million to the process, you can come up with a vaccine as quickly as they did.
Exactly. And I often say that I wish Operation Warp Speed was for every vaccine that we're developing, because it just shows us what we can do in our current society with our current technology and the willpower and the money. Yeah. We can come up with a vaccine. The warp speed is a weird name for an accelerated process that basically improved the efficiency of a process. So let's say you were working on a vaccine and you only work 8 hours a day. We have 24. So if you could fund 24 hours of work on the vaccine, you will get faster.
Okay.
So if you could not, because when we're recruiting people for a vaccine trial, you may hire two or three recruiters, and then it will take forever to accrue the numbers you need. If you have money to go out and recruit for the studies, you have money to do the testing, you have money to, one of the things that they also worked on was if the vaccine was looking promising, they developed the supply chain, they developed everything along the way, the manufacturing, as they were doing the research. That's rarely done.
Right.
So what they took were the delays in an established vaccine system, which is based on funding. So if you don't have funding to bring your vaccine to market quickly, because you need more hours of work, it'll take years. So this process is not that the science is bad because we sped it up. They took away all the natural delays in processing based on working 24 hours with different shifts and just cutting down some of the blocks that you would normally have in production and in development. The science behind this has been on the works for many years because they were using it with the Ebola, some of the new science and two newest vaccines that we heard about. So they were able to just change that platform from doing Ebola and other vaccines to this coronavirus because they know the DNA. Now, this happened because we've been able to sequence DNA. This happens because we have super processors, computers. So 21st century vaccine development manufacturing shouldn't be used with 19th and 20th century science and technology. That's not what we're using. So warp speed is just showing where our science is.
It's amazing how much of a difference the investment can make. And wouldn't it be amazing if this kind of attention and funding was put toward cancer research and heart disease research and all of these
or
other
things. Or
something
like sickle cell disease.
Right.
Sickle cell disease is a genetic, not a very complicated genetic process that if we had had quarter of the political will and money, I think we'd have gotten a cure for that.
But in this case, things have been a little bit different.
We had political will, thank God. We have to. It's a pandemic, and it's the worldwide issue. We really have to work together. This is not just U.S. on its own or Russia or whoever. It's really the world is depending on richer countries to be able to save some lives.
Now, how do we know the difference between, you know, we've got the Pfizer vaccine, there's the Moderna vaccine, there's a Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I just read there's one, a Chinese vaccine that's 86% effective. So you've got a 95%, a 90%, a 77%. How do we, as people who are going to put our arm out for that shot, know which vaccine is best, and do we have a choice in which vaccine we get once they start distributing?
Well, what we know, there are about 19 or more vaccines in the pipeline, and they work on different mechanisms. The earliest ones we have is what we call the mRNA, and they basically took a part of the virus and took the codes that when you get it in our body, that code that the virus that they're injecting us will tell our body to make antibodies to this specific part of the virus that really neutralizes that virus and controls it. So you, if you get infected, you won't get sick and you'll pretty much get mild disease, or you won't feel anything, or you may not get infected, but it does save lives. There's the other ones that are coming use some of the older technology, which takes not the actual, what we call the spike protein, the most part in the virus that makes you develop these antibodies. It takes another virus that gets the virus, the usual old-fashioned way of getting a piece and kill it and take apart, and then your body makes reactions. All of them will probably work to some level of effectiveness. Now, to be effective, the vaccine has to make antibodies in your body, and a lot of people have to take it. That's really true effectiveness. When your body just makes antibodies, we know the potential to be fully effective in our communities there. So we said, that's just efficacious. And you hear Dr. Fauci says, yes, we have a lot of efficacious. The vaccines are going to be efficacious, that we know all the vaccines will get in our body and make enough antibodies to neutralize the virus if you get exposed to it, and neutralize it enough that you won't get very sick. Now, which ones you'll get will depend on how expensive it is. So the ones Johnson & Johnson and some of the other ones that are coming are a lot less expensive to make overall, because this new technology with mRNA is very advanced. And because the part of the virus, the mRNA, is very fragile, these things are like microscopic to be an nth degree, and it's what the genetic code is. So we have the little telling, you know, I tell folks it's like computers. You want to tell the computer to write so-and-so, you'll put in a certain series of codes and it'll show it up. So it's the same thing. So you bring that little code in our body. So that makes it more fragile. That's why it has to be frozen so it doesn't disintegrate. And the manufacturing and processing. So what I see for the rest of the world and for most of the world, they probably cannot afford that vaccine because it's hard to maintain refrigeration at that level. So we know in the future, as they develop more vaccines, we're going to look for vaccines that can get the body to react just as well as these new vaccines, but don't cost as much to make and don't have as much storage requirements.
Is this different from the vaccines that we get as children? You know, we get the measles, mumps, rubella. You know, we had vaccines for polio, scarlet fever, you know, all of these things that we don't have anymore, except for measles. There have been outbreaks because of the groups of people who have decided that it's not good for their children. You know, I was vaccinated for everything as a child, and I think I'm okay. So how is this different, or is it different at all from the vaccines that we've been taking all our lives with no problem?
Well, the difference with this vaccine, again, is that they're taking a part of the virus that we call it the spike protein. Actual viral spike protein, the code for it, and then they're inserting that in your body, and then your body incorporates that into your DNA, which is the factory, to make the antibodies to it.
Isn't that the same way that a measles vaccine works?
not the exact viral code.
Okay.
The measles vaccine then takes a killed portion and they purify it and process it and then makes your body to create a response.
Okay.
So it's very similar. It's just what part of the virus they take. And so the part that they take is a little different with this one. But it's basically the same. It's like if I got the real coronavirus, I'm getting that part of the virus. So rather than it injected in me, I'm getting the same part of the virus and I'm going to make antibodies to that part of the virus.
So how do we explain to people the difference between having it injected and it creating antibodies and you'll be okay with you get it naturally and you might die?
So that's why vaccines are necessary. Which vaccine? I don't know enough, and we have not seen the data. So I don't know which one is the safest at this point until the FDA comes out with the review.
Right.
Usual vaccines, we don't go after 30,000. You will go to thousands and almost a million before you start seeing people saying, go ahead and do it. That's why it's not approved for children, because you really have to test a drug for a while to make sure that it's safe. Because if you do it to children, they're going to live another 70 years. Who knows what will happen?
Right.
So that's why we're being very cautious. And that's why the science and the FDA and the vaccines folks are independent. They're not by Pfizer. They're not by the U.S. government in the sense that you're going to say that Trump is, you know, put in his people. These are independent people.
Well, now that the FDA has approved the Pfizer vaccine and distribution could start as early as tomorrow, of course, in priority order, with frontline healthcare workers as first priority, that may actually be an opportunity for the skeptics to have some time to get comfortable with the idea of the vaccine, because by the time it gets to us, the regular people, it could be another 6 months, who knows, maybe longer down the road.
Yeah, you always protect your caregiver.
Right.
Because if your caregiver goes, what's going to happen? Like what we've seen some rural hospitals in the U.S. and around the world, if their doctors go down and their nurses go down, they don't have anyone to provide the care. That means more people will die.
Right. And we're already seeing the burnout of the healthcare workers is just unbelievable. And what they're dealing with, the fear they have to deal with, especially at the beginning when they didn't have the equipment they needed, the PPE, the respirators, you know, that seemed to come under control for a while, but that was also when the numbers were going down. Now we have these spikes that keep getting bigger and bigger. We're setting new records every day for new cases and new deaths. And, you know, I assume that it's because people are not following the protective guidance from the CDC because they're pandemic burned out. They just want to see people and they're willing to take that risk.
Unfortunately, it's sad that we haven't framed it in a way that helps people to become resilient. As I tell folks, love is wearing the mask. Showing love is standing 6 feet away. And it's not a discomfort when you love people and you do what you want to help to people you love, like moms. I mean, mothers make sacrifices all the time. Fathers make sacrifices all the time because they love their children.
Right.
And this is what we hope that we could find a way in our communities. I don't see many parents who get tired of sacrificing for their kids.
Right.
So how do we get folks to realize that there's no such thing as fatigue when it is done with the absolute need to protect each other? And I'm protecting you, you're protecting me, and we're also protecting ourselves, because if we wear the mask, there's less virus that you'll get exposed to. Even if you get exposed to it, if each person wearing masks, there's a lot less virus. And we're learning now, if you get less virus and you get infected without a whole, what we call a viral load, they're finding that you don't do as severely disease.
Right.
So there's more data saying that with you wearing a mask and the other person wearing a mask, even if you get exposed, your chances are doing better. So now we know masks will help protect you from getting infected and it helps protect the other person from getting infected.
And
that's just the best way.
And that's where the social distancing also comes in. If you're standing further apart, the virus, whatever gets past the mask, can't reach you.
Exactly. It's not rocket science. I mean, your mom and your grandmother and everybody told you, cover your mouth when you cough. This virus comes out while you talk, while you breathe. So what's the only way to cover your mouth while you're talking and breathing is with a mask.
Right. And then the other factor I read about is how long you spend in close quarters with someone. That the longer amount of time you spend together, the greater your risk.
Yeah, 15 minutes or more, we find.
Okay.
Now, again, that's not rocket science, because this thing is so tiny, you can't see it. And it also jumps onto larger molecules that you also can't see. So water molecules, pollution particles that you can't see. That's why we find folks who live in polluted environments, we see a higher rates of the coronavirus infection, because the virus hooks onto these larger particles that you're inhaling, or you're swallowing, putting in your mouth and your nose, or you're touching your eyes. These things get in. So that's why the distance matters, the hand washing matters, and the covering matters. And if you're in an area a lot longer, it's floating around out there. It's floating around longer and it increases the concentration. So again, it's not rocket science. If you're around something long enough that's floating in the air, that's really easy to get in. And we touch our faces many, many times in a day.
I just realized I'm touching mine.
Right. No matter how hard we try.
Yeah. So when it comes to our holiday celebrations, we're really talking very literally that you should not have parties indoors, particularly, and you want to stick to, you know, your digital meetings, the Zoom, the Teams, and we'll get past this. I pretend.
Show your love by not seeing. I don't need to see you. Right. I show my love through Zoom. That's my real love, is that I don't infect you and you don't infect me.
Right. Well, what I've said is I've actually seen more people through Zoom than I saw before, because people couldn't travel. So for the holidays, we want you to stay socially distanced, wash your hands, wear your mask, sanitize as much as possible, and, you know, hang in there. And I love the way you phrase it, show your love.
Exactly. And remember, other things happen to folks in hospitals other than coronavirus. And when all the beds fill up, when that stroke happens and that heart attack happens, that delays treatment time and delays access to an ICU bed or somewhere.
Right.
So that's why we shut things down, that you don't want any more coronavirus coming in, because you need space for other illnesses.
Okay.
And coronavirus ICU care is several weeks that they're in there. They're taking up a bed for a lot of weeks. So that's part of the problem when you see that we have to shut it down. Everybody's like, oh, I don't want to shut that. You need beds for other things than to fill it with coronavirus, because stroke happens, heart attack happens.
Right. All I need is the word intubate, and I like mask, stay home. That word terrifies me.
Me too.
Yeah. You know, seeing the course of the disease where people can be intubated for 3 weeks and then they die is even worse, because then you are basically not functioning for 3 weeks, not able to see people, not able to speak to people, not able to put anything in order, and it's miserable. You know, the people who've survived say they have PTSD from being intubated for that amount of time and kept in essentially a coma.
And not just the people, the families also.
Yeah.
This is incredibly trying, because I have patients who have survived it and come out with pulmonary fibrosis, lung fibrosis, and the family are struggling, because these are poor people. How do you get continuous oxygen? How do you get the patients back and forth that they now are in a wheelchair because they really can't walk?
Right.
So it's not so simple for some people. You know, I thank God that you survive and you feel better, but the feeling better is often weeks. And then we don't know it 20 years from now, what does it all mean?
Right.
Because something like a virus that children get called respiratory syncytial virus, they get over it as babies. Then we see increased asthma. So we know it caused some damage.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
No, but we do know that people have been going home with scarring on their lungs, in their hearts. There's neurological repercussions,
right.
And they seem to be long-term. So in some ways, even though people survive, they end up debilitated, possibly for the rest of their life.
Possibly. We don't know.
Right.
But the key that we do know, just like I used to tell my patients HIV, we know wearing that condom protects you. We know getting the test. Right now in HIV, we know if your viral load is undetectable, you're untransmissible. You're not going to infect somebody else. We know with coronavirus, you wear your mask, you stand 6 feet away, you don't stay around anyone, you do more outdoors and you wash, you have a decreased risk of getting it. And that means that you'll be around for the vaccine that works well and a cure or early treatment. And it's coming. It happened with HIV. It's happened with diabetes. It's happened with cancer. That's the beautiful thing about our science and our medicine where we are in the 21st century. We know it's coming. So your role is just to protect yourself, protect your family, and there will be more Christmases.
Okay.
You know, a lot more Christmases.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your insight, your knowledge, and for sharing the love. That is the best way to put it, to show your love, share your love. Dr. Cheryl Holder.
Thank you very much. Stay safe.
You too. And the same, of course, to our listening audience. Thank you for listening to Easy's Community Focus. If you have questions about today's program or would like to suggest a topic, you can email me at ellen@easy93.com. Join me again next Sunday for an all-new edition of Easy's Community Focus beginning at 6:50. Stay safe. Have a great day.